Hello, and welcome to the Preview Spotlight on the Comic Book Page podcast. My name is John Mayo.
And I'm Bob Breitall. In this episode, we'll be spotlighting items from the current month's previews catalog.
So once again, we're doing an interview episode for our preview spotlight, and this time we're actually releasing it a little early, so hopefully that'll give, you know, people a little more chance to consider if they want to get some of these titles or not.
Yeah, and I know talking to the creators and hearing them describe the books actually swayed me to try out some things that I might not have otherwise tried, and that really speaks to the fact that it's hard to convey information about a series from just a 50-word tiny little extract in previews. And being able to see some of the art and being able to see some of the story, hear some of the story pitches rather, was really a big factor in making that decision and seeing whether something sounded interesting at all to us. So we're going to start out today talking to Dwight McPherson, who's got several things in this month's previews. He's got a new volume of The Surreal Adventures of Edgar Allan Poe, which I had originally passed up when the first volume came out. And after talking to Dwight, you'll hear the interview in a moment, I changed my mind. I'm going to be getting this. And in fact, we went back and we got a special discount from DCBS on the first volume, not the second volume that's coming out this month, because as Dwight explains, the first volume, you want to read that as a precursor, so we'll make it a little easier to get your hands on that first volume. It's 50% off, and you'll be able to get it for only $4.99 through DCBS. And Dwight also has a trade paperback in this month's previews for the Dead Men Tell No Tales storyline that he did. So you'll find Edgar Allan Poe on page 155 of previews and the Dead Men Tell No Tales trade on page 208. With that being said, let's talk to Dwight.
Okay, and we've got with us tonight Dwight McPherson, who is the creator of couple of books that are in the June previews. The first one is The Adventures of Edgar Allan Poe. What's the full title of the trade, Dwight?
It's called The Surreal Adventures of Edgar Allan Poe, Book 2.
Okay. Tell us a little bit about this book. And if we like what, would we also then like Edgar Allan Poe?
Well, Book 2 takes up pretty much where Book 1 left off. And it's following the adventures of Edgar Allan Poe's cast-off imagination as he's traveling through the land of dreams to try to reunite with his true self, which is Edgar Allan Poe. So there's a lot of mythology. There's a lot of creatures, if you will. It's really hard to pitch in one thing because it's a pretty intricate concept. If people like Mouse Guard, I think they'll love this. It's very Lord of the Rings, very Chronicles of Narnia kind of adventure. So,
cool. And can somebody pick up Volume 2 and get into the story? Do you have kind of a what has gone before, or do they really need to get into it with Volume 1 and then move into Volume 2?
Actually, I think this is one that you would have to get Volume 1 to fully understand what's going on. Could you jump right into it and enjoy it? Yes. I mean, it's a fantastic epic adventure that it's not necessary that you know all the back elements, but it definitely would help.
Okay, so we can look for that on a backlist somewhere. Do you know if Image is doing any kind of offered again with Volume 1 or if it's still in print or not?
Yes, it will be in previews. They're resoliciting it again, so the first volume, so you can get both of them. You can just get them both in one pop.
Oh, great. So they'll both be there. Perfect.
Yes.
So you have a second book in previews from Arcana, a collection of your Dead Men Tell No Tales series. Tell us a little bit about that one.
Dead Men Tell No Tales is, once again, an epic adventure of pirates searching for the lost treasures of Christ, which the Templars have taken to the New World. So you have Captain Kidd, Blackbeard, and Bartholomew Roberts that are trying to track down this treasure of Christ. But it carries a curse, and they're forever cursed to sail the seven seas looking for this treasure of Christ. And if people like Pirates of the Caribbean, you know, Raiders of the Lost Ark. It's really hard to find a book that actually, a comic book that actually covers this kind of topic, but those movies are very comparable to what we did with Dead Men Tell No Tales.
Oh, very good. So you're also going to be doing something that I really enjoyed from Free Comic Book Day, which was the Adventures of Kid Houdini and Silver Dollar Misfits. When's number one coming out for that?
The graphic novel will be out in July. I'm told July 15th. So we're very excited about that. We had a great reaction to the Free Comic Book Day book. And it's awesome. I mean, it's everything that I loved about the Hardy Boys mysteries and Scooby-Doo. So it's kind of like my take on all that. So you know it'd be strange, right?
Yeah. Well, I have that one on order. So when that one comes out, that'll be definitely something I'm looking forward to giving a read, because it's the Free Comic Book Day issue was perfectly timed, because it really gave enough of a taste to let me know that I wanted to read the entire graphic novel when it comes out.
Outstanding. Thanks for pre-ordering.
Yeah. Now, is the Free Comic Book Day, it almost seemed like, is that just the first few pages of the graphic novel, or is that something else entirely?
Yeah, it's the first chapter of the graphic novel.
Okay.
So those who have read the Free Comic Book Day book will actually have a jump on everybody else. But it's not necessary that you have the Free Comic Book Day book to enjoy the graphic novel.
Right. So I'll just start reading at chapter 2 when I get the graphic novel.
There you go. It should be out in a month and a half. So I'm very excited about it.
Very good.
Now, are you going to be at any conventions coming up to where people can talk to you and check out the various things you've got coming out? Because you've got, I mean, Edgar Allan Poe, Dead Men Tell No Tales, and Kit Houdini. I mean, that's quite a bit. So.
Thanks. Yeah, I've got other stuff coming up too. But yes, I'll be at AdventureCon. Let me see, what's the date on that? June 13th, 14th, and 15th. And then I'll be at HeroesCon on June 20th, 21st, and 22nd. And that's my con appearances for this year. So.
Now, where is AdventureCon?
AdventureCon is in Knoxville, Tennessee.
Okay. And HeroesCon's that big one out in North Carolina, right?
Yes, Charlotte, North Carolina.
I keep meaning to go out to that some year, but just haven't made it yet.
You should. It's fantastic.
I've heard great things about it, so yeah.
They really care about the creators. Treat the creators exceptionally well, so love it. Love going there.
That's good. Now, you're going to have Table and Artist Alley. You're going to be at a booth at these conventions. Where can people find you and check out your stuff?
Last year, I was right across from the Image booth. I'm thinking I'm going to get somewhere in that same locale. I have a booth. I haven't been in Artist Alley. I'm usually right there in the booth in the middle. I was with Steve Niles and a couple other guys last year, so we had a fun time. So I would say yes, we'll have a booth set up.
Cool.
Definitely.
Well, that's good. But you're not going to make it to San Diego?
No. I wish I could. I can't. I'm a single father with three kids. So really, it makes it hard with childcare. But when they're older, I will definitely be there. I'll tell you that much. But in the meantime, it's grandpa and grandma all the way.
Yeah. It's a nice zoo out there in San Diego.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Both inside and outside the convention.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, yeah. I bet.
Okay. So we look forward to seeing the books come out. I'm looking forward particularly to Kid Houdini. And after your description of Edgar Allan Poe, I think I'm going to be checking out that one also.
Excellent. I appreciate it. It's really hard to to actually, you know, tell people what it's about. It's funny. I've had to pitch it to a few producers, and I'm like, okay, let me see how I can do this. It's a really unique concept. I did it as an all-ages book, but, you know, to encourage my kids to read, because there are several aspects of Edgar Allan Poe's work that show up in the work, and also his love for mythology. So there's a lot of mythology in it too, with all kinds of Kraken showing up and fighting against Odin, and you know, I mean, it's just, you know, it's all encompassing. So it's really I really can't compare it to anything except really Lord of the Rings and Chronicles of Narnia, and Mouse Guard really is the closest thing we have to that. So I hate to keep going in Mouse Guard, but there is a rat in there that talks, I guess, you know, so. And a crab, actually, so. It's fun.
It's always good to have a talking rat.
Yeah, exactly. I think every book should have a talking rat and a monkey, and I mean, everything would sell huge.
That's true.
Oh, yeah. I'm trying to work a monkey in the next one, so we'll see how that goes.
Flying monkey at that. Those are always good.
Yes, now that would rock. But people would say, oh, you're ripping off Oz, you know. I don't know. You really can't think about that too much. You just write what you like and hope everybody digs it, you know?
Yeah. Yep.
So I wrote these for my kids, and especially Kid Houdini, because, I mean, I watch the cartoons that they watch, and I'm like, oh, this is garbage, you know? So,
make it a gliding monkey, kind of like a flying squirrel, and then it's not a, you know, as long as you don't have the big wings coming out the back of it, then
oh,
it's
yeah.
not derivative of Oz.
Well, see, that wouldn't be hard to work into Kid Houdini because he's already working with Circus Freaks, so.
There you go.
Hey, I'm going to write that one down. I'll give you a special thanks in the book.
Yeah. We'll do that. Put a credit there.
Yeah, there you go. But I appreciate you guys talking to me.
No problem.
So, I don't know. It just seems like sometimes as creators, we go through these long periods where, like, you know, you're the bastard child and no one wants to talk to you. And then you go through spurts where, like, everybody wants to talk to you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's always good. I love talking to people about my stuff. Besides my mom, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's true.
Well, I mean, like,
your mom will always talk to you.
Yeah.
Exactly. She'll tell you she likes it, too, and I don't know if that's always truthful, but, you know, I'll take what I can get.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, spotlighting independent titles and stuff like that that people just may not have seen in previews or not noticed. So, and certainly between, you know, Kid Houdini, Edgar Allan Poe, and Dead Men Tell No Tales, I mean, you've got three of them right there, so
I'm cool.
Sure everybody should like at least one of them. So.
Well, I definitely appreciate it. I mean, okay. I'm always looking for ways to get other independent creators out there, too. You know, some of my friends.
It's difficult when you have these tiny little ads in previews to really get the concept across and have somebody understand what the book is and get enough of a taste of it from a little blurb to know if you're going to like it. And that's why I really like the free comic book day on the Houdini. And, you know, getting something like that, even getting a couple of pages on Edgar Allan Poe or The Dead Men Tell No Tales, you know, that's the kind of thing that can swing people one way or another. By the way, if you've got any online previews of any of that stuff, if you want to shoot us a link, we can put that in the show notes so people can check that out. If
sure,
you've got,
absolutely.
You know, some pages up on the internet that people can check out to see if they'll like this.
I have like 64 or 65 pages of Edgar Allan Poe Book 1 online.
Cool.
So people can go check it out.
Yeah, definitely send us the link to that. We'll put it in the show notes. Yeah,
I will definitely do that. And people can also download the Kid Houdini Free Comic Book Day book from Viper's site. So I'll send you a link to that to you.
That'd be perfect.
Yeah, cool.
But the thing is, the stuff that I write is so different. You know, I mean, I'm a huge Alan Moore fan, but really, I don't know. I guess a lot of my readers say that I have just a unique take on things, and I don't know if that's because I, you know, am very strange or, you know, I've just been blessed with a gift, but I Edgar Allan Poe, I mean, when you read the first book, you're going to be like, what the heck? You know, I sent it to Todd Lincoln. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He wrote Jason X and some good movies besides that one, but anyways. When I sent it to him, he's like, good Lord, where do you come up with this stuff at? You know, I wish I could do this. I don't know. I'm thankful. You know, I wrote those for my kids, like I said, so it's really an effort of love. So I think it shows, hopefully.
Well, it's always better to be doing it for those kinds of reasons versus just for the paycheck or whatever. You wind up with better stories, and I think people,
yeah.
you know, react well to those kinds of stories.
Exactly. You know, that I guess that's the bonus of doing a creator-owned book. I mean, it's something that you create, that you control, that you give birth to, and you see it mature. Whereas these other guys, I mean, it's just a job to them. They send in a script, and they get edited about, you know, by 12 different editors, and
and it gets printed. I mean, by the time that it actually sees print, I mean, how much do you think is actually that writer, you know?
Yeah.
So that's I love doing creator-owned stuff. I mean, I definitely wouldn't turn down a Marvel book, but, you know.
But you're only going to get that offered after having done the creative-owned stuff and having made a name for yourself.
Right. That's what I'm trying to do now. Like I said, I've got a mini-series that'll be coming out in September. I mean, it's a pulp adventure. It's everything that I liked about 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s radios, you know, the pulp serials, the dime novels. I mean, you have jetpacks, laser rays, aliens, robots, Nazis. I mean, it's got it all. It's huge. I'm really excited about that one, too. So
cool. Well, when that comes out in previews, let us know, and we'll have you back on to talk about that.
I definitely will. The first issue will be out in September, so I guess that'll be, what, next month?
Wow. That would, yeah.
Yeah.
It all comes so fast.
Well, you know, that's the way it seems. When I have books come out, it's like three or four at a time, and then, like, nothing. And then, like, three or four at a time. It's just the way it works out. I mean, I'm so involved in the production of my books that a lot of times I get bogged down and I don't have like I've got other projects going on right now. I'm doing one with Jorge Lucas, who's doing drawing the Darkness right now.
Uh-huh.
And it's a, you know, I bill it as, you know, Lovecraft for the 21st century. So it actually brings the whole Cthulhu mythos into the 21st century, post-apocalyptic future. You know, I mean, it's just something that's like, I think it's going to be huge, and especially with Jorge drawing it, that guy is phenomenal. So, and then I've got some other all-ages stuff that I'm working on. I've got one called Super Brat, and basically the, you know, Superman is a 10-year-old brat, and it's up to, you know, the superheroes to actually try to bring him over to their side, and of course, you know, the villains are trying to do the same thing, but so he actually teams up with a superhero. It'd be the equivalent of, like, Superman being Captain America's sidekick, you know? You got this all-powerful being that could just, like, destroy the hero, you know, the other guy with, like, a, you know, a look, but he's actually teaching him what it means to be a hero, and it's, you know, it's one of those tentpole kind of stories, but I'm really excited about it. It lets me poke fun at a lot of the Marvel and DC heroes, too, so that's a lot of fun. Not that I have anything bad to say about them, but it's just, you know, it's fun.
Yeah, we'll have fun with it and stuff, and it certainly sounds like a cool idea, a good premise, so.
Oh, thanks.
Should be fun to check out, too.
I'm working on that with Jorzak. I don't know if you're familiar with him. He did Atomic Mike.
Oh, yeah, I read Atomic Mike. I like that. That was fun.
Oh, yeah, he's working on Super Brat with me, so.
Cool.
I'm really excited. Yeah, they actually got a cartoon deal out of that, so we'll see, though. I mean, from what I hear, Cartoon Network has like a stockpile of titles that they just are holding on to, you know, kind of keep optioning whenever they come up. So it's just so funny. You look at the stuff that's on Cartoon Network and then the stuff that I know other creators that have stuff there, and it's like, why are they running this crap? I mean, they've got some great stuff, and you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. I can't even begin to understand what they're thinking.
Well, definitely let us know as these other titles start coming out and stuff so we can promote those and help you out with that, because it sounds like you've got a lot of great ideas coming down the pike. So
thanks. I'm trying to do a little bit of everything, you know? I've just got a lot of different inspirations for writing and stuff, so a lot of interests. So I'm just trying to get them all out.
Cool.
Very good. Thanks
well,
for joining
us. To death.
No problem.
I appreciate the interview. I definitely do.
Well, happy to do it. And like I said, thanks for joining us. And as the other stuff comes out, we'll be happy to have you back on and talk about those.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Next up, we've got an interview with John Bryans, who's the writer of N-Guard. And like you were saying earlier, listening to the creators pitch the thing can really make a difference. This is one that I had seen last month in previews with the first issue, and he's going to be talking about the second issue here. And after listening to him, getting an idea really of what the story was about and stuff, this seemed like something that was, you know, really in line with the sort of things I've been kind of looking for. So I've not only am I going to order number two, but I've already put number one on my order with the DCBS. So this is from Marcosia, or AAM Marcosia. It's on page 196. It's NGARD number 2, and let's listen to John.
With us tonight is John Bryans, who is the writer of the series NGARD. We had issue number 1 in the May previews, and issue number 2 is coming out here in the June previews. We should be getting a special discount for that through DCBS, and it's coming out through AAM Marcosia near the front of the indie section. And John, why don't you tell us a little bit about the general idea behind NGARD?
NGARD is a group of four heroes. It's an anthropomorphic property geared at an all-ages audience. The main heroes, there is a raccoon, a cat, a bear, and a rabbit. Basically, the way the story starts and moves on is they're on a field trip, the last field trip with their school in the graduating year, and they're attacked by a group of evil spiders called the Spider Sect Empire, and in this they flee. They manage to get away, but while escaping, they're drawn into the Nature's Keep, which is the realm where Mother Nature exists. Once there, they discover that they were actually predestined to arrive there, and they are granted magical powers, if you will. I don't want to call them superpowers, from Mother Nature and through the amulets of nature. They end up becoming the last hope against the Spider Sect Empire to save the planet. As the spiders are wanting basically to terraform the surface of the planet to look more like their underground dwellings because they're starting to run out of room. And the series goes on from there, obviously.
That's a nice good pitch line for it. So if you've rehearsed this, I appreciate that. That's cool.
Not a problem. It's about 19 years old.
Well, the first question I've got is, why did you decide to go anthropomorphic?
You know, it's funny. People have asked me that question many times over the years, and I have no preconceived pitch line to explain it. I was a very big fan of Ninja Turtles. Obviously, a lot of people that they're in comics was a fan of the original comics of Ninja Turtles. I was also a big fan of G.I. Joe. Obviously, Star Wars had its impact in my life. So when I started to create a property, I was looking at something that there wasn't a lot of it out there at the time. And obviously, as I just said, the property is about 19 years old now. So at the time, there wasn't a lot of anthropomorphic properties around. In developing it, the very first incarnation of the property was a very military line where we actually had the cute and cuddly animals running around with machine guns and all of that. And then through pitch sessions and dealing with animation networks, and we discovered that it's very hard to actually sell the idea of a cute and cuddly animal carrying a machine gun. So with that, we went back and did a redevelopment, which is where we've come to with what we are now.
Well, when I was flipping through the PDF of the first issue that you sent, really, it kind of struck me similar as, and when you mentioned the turtles, it kind of makes sense. I was actually thinking Power Rangers.
Yeah, I try to steer away from trying to explain it that way, and the reason being is because I feel you fall into a specific cliche if you say you're Power Rangers, and immediately people think it's campy and cheesy.
Yeah, no, that's unfortunate.
And I don't want to do that.
Well, and I mean it in the best of all possible ways. I'm a big both Power Rangers fan and Sentai, which is the Japanese version. And you seem to be hitting a lot of kind of the cool key elements of it. You know, the young group of teens, the predestined for the powers, the fighting the evil, that kind of stuff. And it looks like a really fun series.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's taken a long time to come to where it is, and I'm very, very proud of what it is now. Not that I wasn't proud of what the property was prior to this, but obviously we're really, as we're noticing now with a lot of people that we're dealing with, we're really starting to catch on with people. People are starting to actually be able to grab onto the property, and they're feeling a lot of elements that they felt, like especially people in my generation in the 30 years where they grew up with the 80s cartoons are starting to feel that real classic type of storytelling again.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. This is a four-issue limited series, correct?
It is a four-issue miniseries. We're doing the four issues, then we're going to do a trade paperback where there will be an exclusive, I don't want to call it a fifth comic because it's going to be a who's who.
Uh-huh.
But we're also going to include 8 pages of new comic book at that point as well.
Now, do you have plans for, if this does well, for another miniseries, or is this just the one miniseries and that's it?
No, actually, it's funny that you asked that. The day that Bob first contacted me about this interview, I was speaking with Harry, and we've already started plans. I've already started writing the sequel.
Cool. That's good to hear.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully orders will do well for this. People will check it out and give it a shot.
Well, we're certainly hoping. But again, I mean, we all know what the industry's like today, so we just take the best stab at it that we possibly can and hope for the best. But you know something, in the end, the main thing that I'm wanting is I just want to get a really good story out there and have people enjoy it. It's not in any way, shape, or form about the volume, though. It's, don't get me wrong, it's going to be great. Hopefully the book sells out, fingers crossed. But I just want to get the story out there and really be able to entertain people.
Well, that's cool, and it certainly looks like you're off to a good solid start in this first issue. And what I like is this definitely falls in the category that I would consider an all-ages versus a kid's book, because it doesn't seem to be the least bit dumbed down or simplified or trying to do a spoon-feeding that some of the other companies seem to try to do when they do for a younger audience. This just seems to be a good action adventure that's suitable for all ages.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, because I'll be honest, it took quite a lot of writing to, as you said, not dumb it down. The first couple of drafts that I did were very dumbed down, and I went back and reread them. And as I said, somebody in their 30s, I was very offended. I'm like, I would never read that. That's just, that really doesn't capture anything. So I did a lot of writing and rewriting on it, and I'm very, very happy with where it's ended up. And so is a lot of other people that have had a chance to see it.
Cool. Well, that's good. I'm trying to think what else would be good for people who might be either on the fence or might not want to give this a try. What would kind of convince them to do that?
How about this? How about, what would you characterize it as? If you like X, then you should also like N-Guard. What are some of the things that you were shooting for as a similar taste for people? Not that it's derivative of or that it's exactly the same as something, but what are some of the things that if people enjoy them, they should also enjoy this series?
Well, I would say one of the main things is cartoons from the 80s. If you enjoyed the likes of Transformers, Thundercats, Silverhawks, and I could go on and on and on, you will certainly be able to step into this book and enjoy the feel. As John said, in regards to Power Rangers, if you're a fan of Power Rangers, I believe as well, you could certainly pick up the first issue of this book and really get that feel, like you were saying. In regards to what would I say if you like this or if you like that, honestly, if you like good storytelling and you like characters that actually are, excuse the pun, rooted, I think that you would probably find this series to be something that could be captivating, especially once you get past the first issue. The first issue was actually used mainly as a, here, this is who's in the book. We're going to really discover right away who they are, what they are, why they are, and then we'll be able to move on. As of issue two, that's when the real threat is going to start to build up, and there's a lot of seeds that are being planted throughout the first four books that are really set up for the sequel that's planned already. There's elements in it. I mean, if you're a fan of the Matrix trilogy, if you're a fan of Star Wars, if you're a fan of, I could go, the list could go on. If you're a fan of really cool genre, you're going to be able to enjoy this book. I hope that answered it.
That works for me. This is one of those books that I think the way previews is set up, really, it doesn't serve a book like this. Because I had seen the cover for the first issue, it had the 50-word or less blurb or what have you, and it didn't really hit my radar. But having talked to you on this, having, you know, flipped through the PDF of the first issue, this is one that actually I'm very interested in, and it looks just like a lot of fun. And I think you're equating it to the 80s cartoon is just dead on the money. I think you're very successful in going after that feel of the storytelling, that genre, those types of heroes. So I really hope this is successful for you, because I want to read that sequel too.
Well, I thank you very much for the kind words. Believe me, they're well appreciated. I will let you know a few things about the property. This might help in regards to information about it. The property was developed specifically in mind in the original steps as an animated series. I myself work as an animation coordinator in the animation industry, and I've written a number of animated movies that are in development. Obviously, we don't have anything out as of yet, but they should hopefully, a few things should be happening over the next 2 years. At the moment, the property is being shopped around, obviously, with Harry from Marcosia. We've ended up getting an agent in Hollywood and in England at the same time. I've just worked on securing a deal with a novel writer, because I am a comic book writer. I am a movie script writer. I am not a novelist in any way, shape, or form. So this deal that was secured with him, we're actually putting this first miniseries together as a novel, and then we'll proceed further. We have plans for about 7 books, maybe six, but kind of I think we have an idea for a 7th. that we'll be moving forward with. We're also shopping it around in regards to toys. And we have actually, and it's funny that you brought up the Power Rangers issue. Bandai, which is the company that put the original Power Rangers toys out, have actually given us a letter of intent stating that if we can go out and actually secure an animation deal, that they will certainly be interested in putting the property out as an action figure line.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's been a long uphill battle. I'll be honest, for many years it was a struggle. We ran into a lot of walls as we were going along. We would go to an animation company and they'd be like, "Oh, you want to do a cartoon? We'll go out and get a toy license." So okay, we would go after that, and as soon as we go to the toy company, it's like, "Oh, you want a toy license? Well, go get the animation deal." But nobody was ever willing at first to meet in the middle. I attribute that to the fact that the property itself wasn't styled in the right genre at that time. It wasn't going to be a very easy sell, so they were probably using that as an excuse. But now the doors are open, and a lot of people are looking at it with their eyes wide open. They're very excited and receptive to what it is now.
Well, that's cool. Now, I would have been very disheartened if you had said that the animation companies or the toy companies didn't want to touch it because, well, it's got a raccoon. If that had been a fox or something, that would have been okay. You know, that kind of discrimination would have really just set me off. But I can see the get-the-other-deal-first kind of catch-22, which is unfortunate.
You know, it's actually quite funny that you said that because my licensing agent was actually in touch with a company in Canada. And the specific thing they came back with was they were, "Well, we don't know if the main character's animal suits it. We think you should probably use something cooler like a fox or a wolf because raccoons won't sell." Well, of course, I countered back with that by saying, "Well, what about the Raccoons cartoon series that's been out in Canada for 20-odd years? You can't state that a raccoon can't sell when this is one of the most popular cartoons in Canada."
Yeah.
So, and immediately they backed down on that.
That is funny.
It was, and it's quite funny that you said it. I mean, as soon as you said it, it's like, oh, yeah, okay. I mean, now I can see why they actually asked that.
Well, this seems to have a lot of things that resonate with a lot of the properties that have really stood the test of time. I mean, your comment about Turtles, you know, I mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles started way back in the you know, 80s, so that's 20 years plus, and it's still going. So if you can kind of tap into that level of success, I mean, you've got a meal ticket written for you, certainly. So,
well, you know, one of the greatest personal achievements that I've had with the property is I'm very good friends now with Peter Laird, who, as you know, is a co-creator of Ninja Turtles. And when I first met him, I actually showed him the property, and that was one of the first things he said to me, that he saw the same staying potential with my property as he did with his Ninja Turtles.
Cool.
Yeah, that was an amazingly cool feeling when he said that.
Well, anything we can do to help get the word out, certainly let us know. Are you going to be at any conventions this year?
Actually, the only one that I at the moment I'm going to be attending is the Paradise Comic Con in Toronto, and that's on July 12th and 13th. Reason being, I would love to travel to more conventions. It's not a problem doing so. It's just the fact that with work, we're very behind on the series we're working on, so we're trying to make up time, so it kind of doesn't allow for much getting out.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah, it is. And you know something, I had totally planned on going to San Diego. I may possibly do the August show in Toronto, which is the Sci-Fi Expo. I don't know. I have to discuss it with the company that runs it. But, I mean, it's a potential chance of doing it, but I won't know for sure for about a month.
Now, will Marcosia have a presence at some of these conventions, and will they be showing the N-Guard stuff to people who haven't seen it?
Marcosia has been at a few shows with N-Guard. It's obviously there's not a lot out there because we're not published. We don't even go to print for about another 3 weeks. But what you've obviously seen and other press pieces that we've done have been out there. They did the Bristol show in the UK. They did a show in Germany. And they also just did the MCM, the Movies, Comics, and Multimedia show in London. And N-Guard has been a screaming success at all these shows. We were actually extremely lucky. We were welcomed into the MCM booklet. We were the final 9 pages of that booklet, and it was released to about 25,000 people over the weekend at that convention.
Cool.
So, yeah, it is. And, I mean, that's potentially, it could possibly mount up to quite a lot of fans. I know that Marcosia was inundated with people that weekend just coming up to the booth asking about N-Guard because there was a big banner that was placed up and people were just very excited. So I'm getting quite excited myself, being 3 weeks away from it actually being printed. With the Paradise Comic Con, we're going to be doing an exclusive 300-book copy for there and there alone. It will have an exclusive Leonard Kirk cover. Leonard did the original concept designs for EndGuard, which at the time was called Nature's Guard years ago. So he did a cover for issue number one.
That should be interesting.
Yeah.
Well, cool. I think that's pretty much it. Certainly, I think people should check it out. This is one that I hope does not, you know, fall underneath the radar of a lot of stores and a lot of readers, but I suspect it could.
Well, we took steps. We had a list of the major comic book companies or comic book stores across Canada, the United States, and through the UK, and some of Asia. And I personally sent out an email to each one of the stores in hopes that a lot of them would look at the book a little more serious. And I got a lot of response back from a lot of people saying that they had already placed orders. They were very happy with the look of the book.
Cool.
Yeah, so here's hoping.
Well, and certainly I could see this doing well over in the Asia market.
Yeah. I believe so as well.
Yeah, this seems to be kind of in line with a lot of the stuff they do over there.
Well, the one thing I will add as well is the way the deal is structured with Marcosia, which is fantastic. I mean, I cannot praise this company anymore. They are brilliant. I'm already starting to work on a new miniseries of a different property that I've created, which we're hoping to have out in the middle part of next year. But even if the book doesn't do exceptionally well, though we'd all be extremely surprised if it doesn't, it will still come out in trade paper form. So the full series will come out in the end, no matter what.
Cool. That's good to hear. Thanks for joining us, and best of luck to you. I hope it pans out well for you.
Well, I thank you very much, and I really appreciate you taking the time. I mean, it's fantastic to just have a chance to talk to people that are in the industry that enjoy comics the way you guys do.
Well, that's what we're here for, and getting the word out on titles that I think a lot of people may have not noticed in the overwhelming flood of information and previews every month is always a lot of fun, and this is certainly one that I think there's an audience for, and hopefully they'll find it and enjoy it. So, cool.
Well, I'm hoping they saw it in previews, because we did receive a Diamond staff pick for the book.
Well, that's right, you did. I remember seeing
yes,
that.
We did.
Forgotten about that. Cool.
Yeah, we were quite excited about that.
Now, that's one that they read stuff and what they like, they pick. How's that process work?
I'll be honest, I'm not exactly sure. I left that in Harry's hands. He just came back to me one day and said, oh, by the way, this is what's happened. I'm under the understanding that he was talking with one of the members of the staff, and they had requested to see it. As soon as they saw it, they slapped their name on it saying it was a staff pick, which, believe me, it was an honor beyond honor for me.
Cool. Well, congratulations on that.
Thank you.
All right, and we may talk about this on one of our weekly spotlights, depending when it comes out, what else is coming out that week and stuff. But certainly, like I said, I hope it does well for you, and thanks for coming on.
It was my pleasure. Thanks again for the time.
And finally, we've got J.S. Earl, writer of Pistol Fist. This is another one where we've got the second issue this month, and the first issue was last month. This was another one that I had seen in previews and didn't really click with me at the time, but after listening to him and talking with him and being able to look at the PDF of the first issue, I was really impressed with this, and this was another one that I've added the first issue to my order, and I'm definitely getting the second.
Yeah, and I've done the same.
Well, I mean, this is a case where listening to the creators, giving them a chance to really pitch their work, and having more to base the decision on than a postage stamp size image of the cover and, you know, 50 words or less in previews, you know, really made a difference.
And the info for this is on page 234 of the June previews.
So let's listen to the interview with J.S., and hopefully some of our listeners will also give Pistol Fist a chance.
And we've got J.S. Earl with us today, who is the writer on the comic Pistol Fist. Number one was out last month in previews, and you should still be able to get a hold of that if you let your comic shop know you want a copy of that. And number two is in this month's previews. We should be having a special discount on it at DCBS. And here to talk to us again is J.S. Earl. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the general concept behind the series, J.S.?
Sure. Well, first, real quick, too, just because he'll kill me if I don't say anything, but David A. Flannery was also my co-writer on this. So even though I created it, I did pull him in to help because there was a lot going on at the time when I had to write this. But the basic idea for Pistol Fist was to have a superhero set in a different time period, like Zorro or the Lone Ranger. And as I studied that, that's when I basically decided that if we were doing the American Revolution, and if we're doing that and it's going to be about freedom, then the most logical character for that would be a runaway slave. So that's why our main character is a runaway slave, and he's a brother of a famous real runaway slave, Crispus Attucks, who was the Boston Massacre martyr, and a lot of people kind of count him as the first casualty of the American Revolution, and because he was one of the first people to stand up to the British, and I said that was kind of an interesting angle, but basically he takes up the cause of his brother of standing up to the British, and basically really in the beginning, in the first and second issues, it's a lot more about him kind of wanting revenge on the British for killing his brother, but then as the series progresses, especially into issues 3 and 4, it's a 4-issue limited series, he kind of, I don't want to give away too many surprises, but he basically gets guided and starts to kind of turn his focus from just wanting revenge to actually helping the colonists and fighting for freedom and doing a lot of work and actually helping out Ben Franklin, who in a roundabout way is somewhat responsible for some of the bad things that these people do to him, and as far as the device that is stuck on his arm and some other crazy things that happen throughout the series. But I guess that's the basic gist of it.
Now, why did you decide on the Revolutionary War for the time period? Why not, say, the Civil War or some other point?
Well, you know, it just happened that around the time that I was pitching several different ideas, that was one of the ideas I was pitching. I had just read a few books on the American Revolutionary War time. And the more that I read and so many different stories and just incredible, just the passion behind them and the heroism and just amazing stories and just even like that almost lean towards supernatural stories and just all kinds of just incredible stories that nobody's really ever told. And as I mentioned, Benjamin Franklin, I mean, the more that we, you know, really studied him and got into that, not just him, but the people surrounding him and how one of his friends was a spy double agent guy that he didn't know was working for the British, and his son remained loyal to the British and became the governor of New Jersey and everything. And then another one of his friends also discovered where the heart produces electricity around that time. And there's so many fascinating things aside from the human stories, but all the technological and other things. It seemed to be a really cool thing that nobody had really done that much with. And actually right around the same time I had begun working on it was when the guys that are doing Revere and Black Coat started working on those American Revolutionary Wartime things. And none of us really knew that the other ones were doing that stuff and picking that time period. And we picked different elements to focus on with our own things. It's one of those time periods that people hadn't really explored, and it's funny though because that you mentioned that, because one of the ideas that we've had as far as possibly bringing in a modern version of Pistol Fist to have a character that kind of interacts with some of Blue Water's other characters and things is we've actually tossed around the idea of having like a legacy character throughout different decades, that there would be even though that the American Revolution version was the first Pistol Fist, that there might be one that takes up the call in the Civil War and another one that takes up the call in World War One and World War Two and even the Cold War, and we've actually been developing kind of like a legacy kind of idea and focusing on other time periods as well. For people that really study those things and really read like the book 1776 by David McCullough and a few other things, the stories are so inspiring. And the fact that nobody's really done that much cool stuff with them, unless you watch like History Channel or some other things, or you have a really good history teacher, which I didn't have very many of, a lot of those stories get lost. And that's one of the reasons why we did this, was we wanted to use this as a kind of a vehicle to tell some of those stories too.
Now, I assume you did quite a bit of historical research on people like Benjamin Franklin and stuff like that in preparation for this.
Yeah. And I think we did a ton of research, and that's one of the things a lot of people have said are just like they're blown away by how much research we did do. Of course, different people have different opinions about things, you know, regarding Benjamin Franklin and other people as far as the way that they were. But some of the stuff is just logically doesn't really make sense. Like even the fact that the Crispus Attucks, the one who's supposed to be the older brother of our character, some people have said that he was like actually shot like accidentally, but he was actually shot twice. And back then, to reload, especially in the middle of the chaos like the Boston Massacre, would take some time. So for him to actually get shot twice is kind of, I don't know, a little bit far-fetched. Not saying that he might not have done anything wrong or anything like that, but there's a lot of things like that you have to use common sense when you're studying that. And then at the same time too, there's a lot of things, a ton of stuff that we brought in, which is, you know, very, it's either heightened and exaggerated, or it's very allegorical or symbolic. And so, I mean, I love that kind of stuff, and I love Easter eggs and things. So there's tons of things like that. If, people pay attention to them. I'll tell you just real quick, when people check out Pistol Fist number one, and I don't know if you guys even noticed this, but actually when Pistol Fist rides in for the first time and you see him kind of come in on the black horse, actually the horse doesn't have any reins on it, and it doesn't have a saddle. It's supposed to be kind of a free horse, and he's just riding it bareback, and he's just holding on to the hair. And so it's kind of symbolic of him being free. And so there's a lot of stuff like that for people that actually keep an eye out for it.
Cool. Definitely sounds good. And the art on this looks very good too. Do you have plans for things after the initial four-issue miniseries? You were talking about the legacy aspect.
Well, yeah. There's a few different things. We are doing a costume contest for the modern version that people can go to www.freewebs.com/pistolfist. And that is, and people can enter that because we're actually going to be having a costume contest for the modern version of Pistol Fist, which we'll talk about kind of the legacy aspect. And we'll actually, like, that character will actually interact with, like, the Cold War version of Pistol Fist, and there's some different things like that that's going to be tied into that. We do have, there's a lot of different possibilities. It kind of depends on how well it does and what people are interested in. Definitely looks like we're probably going to be doing a Pistol Fist versus the Blackbeard Legacy, and bring in some stuff with that, with Blackbeard and his daughter from their comic thing. And that'll be an interesting combination. But pretty much Darren, the publisher at Blue Waters, pretty much told me I can do whatever I want. So regardless of how things have been done in the past, I can, you know, I can do things so that it's not so bizarre for those two characters to be together. Like, I don't know if you guys remember the Punisher Archie crossover thing, which was a little bizarre. But I definitely, because the way that they do the Blackbeard Legacy is a lot more fun. It's a lot and more kind of cartoony than a lot of pirate books and things that are out there. And one of the things we get complimented on with Pistol Fist is it being a lot more realistic in some ways. And so, you know, since he's kind of letting me kind of take charge of it and do it the way I want, I mean, it's going to definitely have more of a kind of a happy medium in between those things. There's definitely, you know, we'd love to do an ongoing series. I've actually had quite a few other writers that have expressed an interest, like Ben Avery from The Hedge Knight, and my buddy Dwight L. McPherson, and actually the guys that write Revere, the guys that write the Black Coat. I mean, there's a lot of different people that have said that they've wanted to write an issue of Pistol Fist. I mean, honestly, I'd love to do an ongoing series. And you know, one of the things that I had thought about when I was really considering that was with, like, Stan Lee. Like, I love a lot of the characters he created, but a lot of the stories of those characters that are my favorites were not written by Stan Lee. So, you know, as a creator, I think it would be interesting to see what other people do with my character, especially when they're decent writers like all these other guys. I'm very interested to see what they would do, and flattered at the same time that they would want to, you know, really become a part of that and be that interested in the character and that time period and everything that we've set up.
Cool.
I know, I ramble.
that's fine. You got the number one issue that you were kind enough to let us see a preview of, since it's not out in stores yet. I really enjoyed it, and I thought that the setting was good. I liked the historical fact. I'm not as up on the Revolutionary War history just off the top of my head, so I was really happy that you had the historical fact and fiction page at the back of the issue. For instance, I didn't realize Ben Franklin's son had married a British lady, highborn, and was governor of New Jersey, and that plays into the story, and these other kinds of things that you weave into the story. It's really nice. The art, very nice, very detailed. I thought that very high caliber art in the entire series. The color adds a nice element to it. Very good package. And I will encourage our listeners to check out certainly issue number one, which can, as we pointed out, can still be ordered. The previews. Do you have the previews code for that handy, JS?
For number one? I do not I do not have it with me. No, sorry.
We'll look it up and we'll put it in the show notes.
We'll look it up and put it in. It was from Blue Water Productions. It was on page 240 of last month's May previews catalog. And, of course, we'll have the info on issue number 2 that is in this current issue of previews. Thank you very much for joining us. Looking forward to seeing an actual print copy of this comic in my hands.
Same here.
Cool. Yeah. Thank you very much for supporting it.
No problem. Are you going to be at any conventions this summer?
Probably not, because my schedule is pretty tight. I mean, actually, the only one I know I'm definitely going to be at, I'm going to be at the it's in Tampa Comic and Toy Conventions, August sometime. I can't even remember the date right now, but that's the only one I'm definitely committed to, because I'm actually writing 4 graphic novels at the same time right now, so my plate is really full right now.
Well, there's something to be said for actually doing the work, so yeah, that's good. Okay, well, thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you very much.
And as a reminder, we've got our previews call on Friday, June 6th. What time are we going to start that, Bob?
I believe it is at 5 o'clock Pacific. That would be 6 o'clock Mountain, 7 o'clock Central, and 8 o'clock Eastern.
And what we do in these calls is we go cover to cover through previews, but certainly not page by page. And we just talk about the various things we're thinking about getting and, you know, kind of soliciting opinions from the other people on the call as to, you know, is this a good title? Is it not? Is it for me? Things like that. Because I've certainly found that with the 500 plus pages of previews, the additional 100 and so for the Marvel previews, it's easy for me to miss things that I would really enjoy reading. So I find these preview calls very helpful. You don't have to stay for the whole time. You can join in, whatever. All you've got to do is have Skype, because we do this through Skype as a teleconference there, and contact me at thejohnmayo, so THEJOHNMAYO, that's my Skype handle, and just say, hey, I want to get into the Skype call. Now, it helps if you've already got me as a contact prior to the call, to where we don't have to go through that whole process during the thing. And again, you can come whenever you want, stay for as long as you'd like, and it usually goes for a few hours. It's a lot of fun. It's just a very informal look through previews.
Right, and if you don't make it right when the call starts, don't worry about it. If it's 2 hours after the call starts, message us, because it's likely still going, and you can come in, you can go away. People every month will come in and drop off at various points. Not that many people have the stamina to make it through the entire call. So that's not a good thing or a bad thing. There's a lot of stuff to talk about, and then we go off down little side paths a lot of times. We're just chatting about comics. It's a lot of people who love comics, and we're talking about them. So when we get to a certain point, it's not just going to be a straight line through the different things in previews, because some topic will come up, we'll see something, and then you'll start talking about the other work of a creator, or you'll start talking about, you know, what this artist has done before, or what we think about certain things. So it's just chat with people who love comics as much as you do. This is what is fun about this call and why we look forward to it every month. And then the following day is the deadline for submissions for our previews episode. And if you've ever looked at that before, listened to it, and we certainly have the back ones up on the website, we try to get as many different people as possible to come on and submit their favorite one or two items from previews. And again, listening to people pitch something that they love and are passionate about really helps me make decisions on what I might want to try out from previews, because I miss things every month.
Yeah, there have been a number of things that I've started picking up because somebody mentioned them on the previews spotlight or on the teleconference. And, you know, I think that's great, because there's always more good stuff to be reading. And the other thing to consider is we're trying to, you know, match up the right titles with the right readers for them. So there have been times where some of the discussion on the previews call is, you know, is this right for me? Is this the book I would like? Maybe a great book, but, you know, there are some great books I don't get because I don't like those genres. It just doesn't click with me, whatever. I know there are a couple of people who are trying to cut back on their purchases, be it for budgetary reasons or, you know, time reasons, whatever. And, you know, we've often helped people do that in the past and try to make sure that what they wind up with is stuff they'll get the most enjoyment out of. Because there's a lot to choose from. We know that not everyone can get everything, and we're just trying to give you more information to base your purchasing decisions on.
Yeah, and please, we had some duplicates last month. go out to the thread on the forum if you're going to make a submission to the previews episode and just call dibs on a book that you want to talk about. And please look at the thread and see what other things people have called dibs on. And that way it'll just help us not have lots of duplicates, because we want to have as many different things as possible on the episode.
Yeah, we want to cover as many different items as possible, and we want to have as many different people submitting as possible. It just makes for a more fun episode that way.
Okay, that being said, make sure you check out the show notes to this episode. It'll have links to some websites for the various creators. It will have a link to the previews call thread on our forum, and that's where you'll also be able to call dibs on books that you want to talk about on previews. And, you know, the earlier you can send it in, the better. We tend to get a lot of them on the last day, but if you can manage to put together a 1 or 2 minute thing a little earlier in the week, that's great too.
Yeah, that just gives me a little chance to make sure all the volumes are kind of consistent and just kind of prep for the recording that we do Sunday morning. But, you know, we'll take them to the last minute if we have to, but certainly the earlier you get it in, the easier it makes it for us to record that episode, and the quicker we can get that out.
Thanks everyone for listening, and hopefully the interviews were as entertaining and informative for you listening as it was for us talking to these creators. I really enjoyed it, and I learned something about some books that I wouldn't have checked out otherwise.
Yeah, same here.
The show notes and forum for this podcast can be found at www.comicbookpage.com under the podcast and forum sections of the website. Please email us at theguys@comicbookpage.com and let us know what you think of what was discussed in this episode. Thanks for listening.